This is the Rich Eisen Show.
So, as you know, I've had an issue with my Uber rating for quite some time now.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Click your icon in the top right.
View my ratings.
Yeah, view my rating.
Oh, this is fantastic.
16 1-stars.
The Rich Eisen Show. Earlier on the show, Fox Sports college football analyst Bruce Feldman. Bears head coach Matt Eberflus. Still to come. From Amazon Freebies, Bosch Legacy, actor Titus Welliver. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. It's hour number 3 of the Rich Eisen Show here live on NBC Sports on Peacock. If you're seeing us, if you're listening to us, we say hello to you, too. Your ears are just as important as your eyes to us here on the Rich Eisen Show, terrestrial radio affiliate, coast to coast, here on Sirius XM Channel 85, NBC Sports Audio. If you're listening to us on the Odyssey app, coast to coast, we say hello to you and to our podcast listeners. It's your right to listen to us whenever you want. We still say hello to you where all podcasts are acquired. If you missed anything over the last 2 hours, a lot of talk about Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher going at it, my friend Dion as well getting in that fray. You can go to our YouTube page, youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show. But I turn to my guest who has been listening to me open this hour, and I want to stop talking as if he's not here, because I'm a huge fan. Thrilled to have here the star of Bosch Legacy that is available on Amazon Freevee. 4 new episodes left. 2 new episodes are going to drop tomorrow. The final 2 episodes of Bosch Legacy season 1 is going to drop on Friday. The man himself, Titus Welliver, here on the Rich Eisen Show. How you doing, man?
I'm great. Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Good to see you here.
Good to see you in person.
In the flesh.
Not zooming. Not on the phone.
We're not zooming. We're not on the phone. We're here. Although it does look like with your beard that you have been hidden away somewhere. Spider hole somewhere.
I'm always hidden. Well, you know, in between series, when we go on hiatus, I work as a roadie for ZZ Top. And so it just sort of, you know, it ends up working out that way.
It's impressive. It is very impressive. Hey, man, congrats on Bosch Legacy. So me as a fan of the show, we're all fans of the show. Just a dynamite piece of news that you're still doing it. You came back and doing it. So what is it like for you to still be doing this after all this time?
You know, Harry Bosch is a character. I always go back to the very first day when we were shooting the pilot of Bosch, and Mike Connolly said to me, "How long do you think you'd play this guy?" And I said, "I'll play him as long as they'll have me," and that still remains the same. I have been, had the great fortune to play lots of interesting characters in my career.
Yes.
But I have to say that Harry Bosch is the gift that just keeps on giving. And I know, was that a margarine commercial where they said that?
The gift that keeps on, you can't believe it's not butter or something like that. You can't believe it's not Bosch.
You can't believe it's not Bosch.
Exactly.
So it's just, it's really more of a continuation than a spinoff. The character has his own kind of form of evolution. And, I just go where the writers take me. And, being based on these incredible books of Michael Connelly's, and he's got another one coming out in October. I mean, he's prolific. He just keeps going. So in the books, Harry's about 75 years old, so I'm going to be doing, I'm going to be solving crimes at the old folks' home.
Hey, man, it's good that he's still writing. I'm sure the Game of Thrones fans folks were thinking, yeah. Where's the books?
Yeah, they want
it. Keep going.
They want it.
So that kind of is great to see. And so obviously Harry's Bosch is now a PI. So that is a totally different ball of wax than from, the construct and the constraints of maybe the LAPD. And it's so great, man, just watch the character develop. But how about you? Like, how is the character different now than maybe season 1, season 2 for people who are getting into it for the first time?
Well, I think, he sort of reaches the end of his rope. And is really kind of disenchanted, disenfranchised to a certain degree. And he leaves the police force, which has been his life's work. Yes. And it's not an easy decision, but he can no longer kind of navigate the politics and the obstacles. And so he leaves. And so the logical thing for him to do, because he is one of those people who is driven by his advocacy for victims, he you know, puts up a shingle as a private eye, and he's kind of, when we find him, he's kind of somewhat at sea because he's untethered. He doesn't have that job anymore.
Yeah.
And it's not like he's sitting in his office with a stack of PI cases to work. You know, he's been doing the kind of random divorce thing and tailing and background checks, and, you know, he's not operating. His cylinders are not all firing. And so he catches this case, and it's all kind of odd. He meets with this very kind of high-powered security guy who wants an introduction with a character played by William Devane, who is a multi-billionaire from an aviation family, and he hires Bosch to see if he has a living heir. And of course, when there's big money at play, there's going to be people there that are going to try to get in his way. And so it kind of kicks off from there. So the stakes go from being kind of, you know, him just sort of sitting with his dog, listening to some music, to he's kind of back at it. Mm-hmm. But he no longer has the police department behind him. So he's got to navigate this stuff on his own and be creative. So it's Harry, you know, his operating on his wits, which makes for some interesting stuff.
Fantastic. I love it. And for those who may not know, William Devane also once exhorted the crowd in the Astrodome to chant "Let them play" in Bad News Bears Breaking Training.
Yeah.
Way back in the day.
That's true.
By the way, I would, if I was ever on the set with him, I would that's all I would want to talk about with him.
Well, he's good. You know, it was a coup to get Bill, and you know, I go back to the days of, you know, early Rolling Thunder, which is one of the big sort of.
And that Roy Scheider in a helicopter, right? Is that what that is?
No, that's Rolling. That's Blue Thunder.
My bad. I got the Rolling Thunder.
Rolling Thunder is he's a Vietnam veteran who comes back after having been kept in a POW camp, and he comes back to his sleepy little town in Texas. And there's some bad. So it's really ultimately a revenge film. Tommy Lee Jones also has a role in it,
damn,
and it all culminates into a like Paul Schrader bloodbath at the end. But it's a great film, and just sitting across from someone whose work I admired was, I definitely was pinching myself a lot.
Is that a window into my soul that you go a serious piece of film for, and you call him Bill Devane, and I'm like talking about Bad News Bears, Breaking Training, Let Them Play? Is that a window into my soul or something?
You failed. No, and I even Bill, by his own thing, he's like, well, when I was doing Knott's Landing, you know. And we all have those.
By the way, that's what Mike said to me.
I went Knott's Landing
immediately. I went 24. Yeah.
He was at 24.
Yeah, and he went Knott's Landing.
I watched Knott's Landing. I'll admit it. You know,
Knott's Landing, Dallas.
I know.
Yeah.
Oh
back
yeah.
To back.
That's right. And then of course the one that followed Fantasy Island with John with Forsyth. What am I?
Falcon Crest.
Falcon Crest. That was wow. It. Everybody had one of those.
Falcon Crest, Dynasty. Dallas. Man, they were spinning off until, you know, they were just making up new cities all the time.
Now we're down a William Devane or a Bill Devane wormhole, and sorry. I apologize.
Yeah, that's okay.
I sincerely apologize, Titus. That's just the way I go. I've got Titus Welliver here on the Rich Eisen Show. And now, you know, Amazon Freevee is what IMDb TV was. And obviously, Amazon is where you guys got your start. And now Amazon's got like Thursday Night Football and all of these sports.
Yeah.
Do you ever tell everybody at Amazon, without you, there would have been none of this, pretty much? Because Bosch got it started, man. I mean, that was essentially the first show where everybody's like, wait a minute, Amazon is more than just me buying stuff online? Like, I got to watch stuff?
They were very smart. And I have to say, you know, the kind of construct that they created, which is not always the case when you work in network television,
yeah,
was that they kind of delegated the creative stuff and sort of left us alone. I mean, mm-hmm. It's not that they didn't give us notes, but there was not a kind of constant meddling. They knew that the source material with Michael's books, and we had a great creative team of producers and writers.
Yes.
And I think the show kind of just, as good as it got, we never sort of rested on our laurels. And it still continues to be the thing each season when we come back, which is how can we make the show better? And I think it's grown, and to be there at Amazon in its infancy, and to watch where it is now, it's exciting, and I feel proud to have been a part of that. And now, you know, with Freevee, much easier to say than IMDb TV three times, which I agonized. I thought, what am I going to do? I can't say that word. It's exciting because it's, like I said, it's a continuation, but it's Freevee is a new thing, and it's a, you know, it's 2.0, and yeah, we're, you know, it's wonderful for us. We're really excited.
You keep planting flags for Bezos. When are you going into space? When are you going to do that?
You know what?
When are you gonna go up
if
on
I
that?
Send him one more email asking for an invitation,
keeps getting bounced back.
It does get bounced back. It does get bad. And it's his personal email.
It is very odd.
And I'm taking it personal.
What do you get the most when people run into you, Titus, about from any of your movies, TV shows, other than Bosch? Let's take that out. I imagine you must get that quite a bit. But
it depends on the airport and the level of inebriation of the person who's encountering me.
Okay. Okay. Let's start with the airport then.
You know, there was a sort of a stream of shows that I was doing all kind of oddly simultaneously, which was Lost and Sons of Anarchy, and it was not long after Deadwood. Mm-hmm. And so it really just depends on, because not all of those fan bases cross into to each other. So, of course, I can't say this word on your show, okay, but of course we know that word that is repeated endlessly on Deadwood.
Yes.
I have been called that word. It's been shouted at me from moving cars. I've had
MF-er?
No, the C word.
CS? Oh God. Okay. And,
yeah, that one.
Yeah.
And I actually had a New York cop call me that.
What do you mean? You're just walking down the street.
I'm in Grand Central Station, and this cop says, "Hey, beep."
Yeah.
And I kind of went, "Is there a problem, officer?" Oh, no, Deadwood. And then he, you know, then we went on and talked about that. And
it's a hell of an opener.
Yeah, I mean, for opener. Me, it's normally a non-starter. You know, call me crazy.
It's a throwdown ender.
Yeah, yeah. And he had a gun, I didn't. So it's sort of, you know, it was all in his favor. But the thing that always gets me is the Jimmy O'Fallon character from Sons of Anarchy.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, a favorite among career criminals because... When I am typically approached, I'm looking at these people and I'm saying,
yes.
I wonder how many years they've done in the joint, because it's never, you know, I don't get a grandmother coming up and saying, "Oh, that Jimmy O'Fallon, I just loved him." It's a guy saying, "When you pulled the guy's teeth out with the pliers, that was the best." My poor mother, God rest in peace, she just said to me, she loved Deadwood.
Yeah. Oh.
But she could not watch Sons of Anarchy. She said, "Your character is just, he's too evil, and the things that he perpetrates on people, yeah, I can't watch it."
Your character in Deadwood was not like winning any awards.
Not at all. Yeah.
For his goodwill.
Yeah.
Man of the Year award.
I mean, God, some of the conversations you had with Ian McShane with the great Al Swearengen.
Pure filth. And
yes.
But my mother would say to me, "But that's David Milch's writing." She said, "You know, it's Shakespearean." And she said, I don't even really hear the profanity. She said, it's a part of it. And so she said, it kind of rolls off of me. I'm just more invested in the characters and where they're going.
I agree. It was like the if Shakespeare worked blue, it was like iambic pentameter.
Exactly.
The worst words you could ever say. Is it true? Is it true that Milch would give you lines literally the day you had to shoot it? That you were getting lines and scripts and pages like the day.
Sometimes on the set, I'd be in a scene with you know Ian and the other guys in the Gem Saloon, and we'd rehearse it, and David would stop and say, "No, you know what? Actually, what I want you to say is say X, and instead of that, forget that." Or he might even rewrite the entire thing on the fly there, which was interesting to watch the panic in the script supervisor's face, because she's saying, "What did he say?" And she's trying to write it down. And you just...
How do you spell that?
Well, you know, you work with David, and I had, you know, I had already done... That was the fourth show that I'd done with him, so I was very accustomed to working that way, and it's not at all the norm. But there was the gift of that... you know, in the face of abject terror at the same time, was that you didn't get into your head too much.
Mm-hmm.
And you were able to just really just play the scene. And obviously when you're working with a guy like Ian McShane, who is a for me as a god, and I learned a tremendous amount just working with him and watching him. It was pure pleasure. It was like going to, you know, to school. It was a master class, and you just kept your mouth shut and observed and learned from it. So it was a great thrill.
I was about to say, I mean, the scenes sometimes you would be in with Ian McShane, his soliloquies is Al Swearengen. Speaking of which, you said the word pleasure, sometimes while he is actually experiencing such.
And speaking to an Indian's head in a box.
I mean, unbelievable. Were you still there, even though technically you were off camera, just watching that go down?
Oh, yeah. I would look, there were days where I would have a scene and then I would have three or four scenes off in the day, but I would just go to the set to watch Ian work. And there are just some actors that you want to do that. When I did a film, the first film with Ben Affleck, Gone Baby Gone.
Yes.
And I would go, I have one silent bit in a scene with Morgan Freeman, but I would go and watch Morgan work. And a funny little anecdote of that. One day I was there and Morgan was doing the scene, and Ben would go, cut, print that. Let's go again. And, you know, Morgan's worked with Clint Eastwood, and Clint's like a one or two take guy, and you go. And, so it gets to like the fourth take, and Ben says, okay, yeah, cut, print, let's go again. And Morgan just says, and why are we going again? Was there a light stand in my shot? Because if there wasn't, I think we need to move on. And I looked at Ben and I went,
move on.
Gone, baby, gone.
Yeah, that was it. Move on, gone, baby, gone. But what a privilege. I mean, I got to watch Morgan Freeman, you know, for free.
For free.
Yeah.
Well, I have here right on my side where we've had this hat. My wife used to work for HBO on Real Sports. So she got this Deadwood hat, and we would watch Deadwood together over and over and over and over.
Well, it's a family show.
Well, it's a family show. This is pre-kids.
Date night show.
This is pre-kids.
Yeah.
But it was a date night. And we've had every in-studio guest who's appeared here, who's been on Deadwood, sign it. We've had it signed by W. Earl Brown was the first to do it. You said this is a Dan Doherty
hat.
Well,
it looks like a Dan Doherty
hat. He was the first one to sign it. Garrett Dillahunt, who played two characters.
Just saw Garrett.
Kristen Bell, who had a brief arc on the program.
Yeah, she died horribly.
Spoiler
as
alert.
Did most people
spoiler
on the show.
And Timothy Oliphant and Ian McShane have both signed it.
Wow.
Now, the reason why we're not showing what's on it is I have everybody sign it with their favorite curse word that their character said from the show. So in a commercial break, we're going to throw it a break.
That's a uniform word, which we know. If you look it up in the dictionary, there's a picture
Ian
McShane.
Okay, I do believe that has not been actually utilized here. But again, I cannot read out what has been said. I'm going to have you sign this. Then we're going to come back on the program and show a clip of Bosch Legacy. And then you have a little bit more of a conversation. Again, I know you do an incredible Al Pacino imitation. I'm going to need you to please do that for me here on this program.
Okay.
If you don't
it's
mind.
It's going to cost you.
Okay, very good. And then we'll talk a little bit of sports because you're wearing your Celtics shirt. And you've got a big game too tonight. So you're from that area, correct?
No.
Okay. Titus Welliver here on the Rich Eisen Show. Don't go anywhere. Back with you in a moment.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
The first of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Titus Welliver here on the Rich Eisen Show, our terrestrial radio audience back here. And we just saw a clip. And I, of all the things I can ask about this show and the show's history, I'm going to go here. Whose house is that, man?
Yeah.
I mean, what an incredible view. It's at, like, the Hollywood Hills, I believe, right?
Yeah, it's up above Sunset Plaza on that, you know, that crazy tributary winding roads. It's a horrible place to get to. We can only bring in sort of smaller trucks.
I bet.
And it's really tight. It's not a big house, but it has a spectacular view. And actually, we came to it because one of our producers, Peter Janbrugge, had worked with Michael Mann, had done several films with him.
I was about to say, it looks very Heat-like.
That house is in Heat. That's Amy Brenneman's house in Heat.
Is that?
And so we got
this entire time where I'm like, where have I seen it before? That's what it's from?
And now people are saying that it's the same house on The Lincoln Lawyer, which it is not. It's a totally different house. But that house is a character in the show. I mean, that's Harry's perch. It's beautiful. Don't get me wrong. When you're up there, it's for my money the best view of Los Angeles that I've ever seen. And at night, it becomes really, really magical. So, despite the fact that it's laborious getting everyone in there and setting everything up, the crew, in a kind of perverse way, they enjoy being up there because, you know, you can kind of take your meals and sit up on the on the deck and look out, and it's beautiful.
So I was again. I mean, I was saying, where does it? So does somebody live there? And it's just, it's Bosch time. We got to move out, or like what? Do we know?
It's not the person's primary home. I think it's
I kind of stepped into that. Okay, yeah, it's just out there for rental. In the same way that scene from Winning Time was at Lucille Ball's house, right? Something like that.
Yeah.
I mean the dribbles, I guess the one on one scene.
The Sterling House.
Thomas Sterling House. I mean. Yeah. It's all over town.
No, it's
it's pretty cool.
It really lends itself to kind of, you know, that's Harry's perch. That's where he is. Mm-hmm. He comes to that place, and I always thought it was funny because, you know, somebody said, "Oh, obviously you bought it for the view," and he says, "No, I bought it because there's only one way in and one way out." And of course, that ultimately pays off in that episode. I believe it was a season finale where bad guys came to kill Bosch in his house, and they kind of stepped into it. As one of the prop guys said to me, we were getting ready to shoot the scene. He goes, "I guess these guys came to the wrong house." And I went, "Yeah, they did. They left a little heavier."
Titus Welliver here on the Rich Eisen Show. Okay, so we saw your tweet the other day. Love my Celtics. You're wearing the Celtics shirt today.
I am.
So you're from the New England area? Is that where you're from?
I was born in New Haven, Connecticut, but I grew up in New York. I went to boarding school in Maine. Spent a lot of time in Boston. My mother lived there. So all my teams are there. And also, I became a Red Sox fan because my brothers were rabid Yankee fans, and I did it just to be contrary as a little kid.
Understood. Plus New Haven, because I spent some time up the road in Bristol, Connecticut at ESPN for 7 years.
So you know how that works.
That's kind of on the Mason-Dixon line of, do you root for New York or do you root for New England teams?
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Right there. You know?
And so you don't necessarily have to pick a side. I have friends who are, kind of mix it up. But, I went to a lot of Bruins games when I was a kid, and
you've been to the Garden.
Oh yeah, but that's when it was, you know, the great Bobby Orr number four and Esposito, and of course, going back to all the way back to the Bill Russell days and stuff, and they're playing some great ball. I have to say, that the series between them and the Bucks was some of the best ball I've seen in a while. So
I agree.
I'm excited. It ain't over yet. But
No, obviously not. I mean, and plus, you know, what they've become, and Jason Tatum is so terrific, and how few people. I mean, you're looking at a fellow masshole over there, or at least a big Boston fan over there. Just the delight that fans of the Celtics have had this year, not really expecting it, and seeing how they performed. So who was your guy? Like, is it Larry Bird growing up? I mean, watching that? Yeah. I mean, those Bird Celtics days?
McHale, Danny Ainge. That was that was a great, great time in ball. I actually, it was funny, and this is later because this is from a few years ago, than, Garnett and the guys. But this is a few years ago. Mm-hmm. I was at a restaurant, and I walked in, and Doc Rivers was there, mm-hmm. and now coaching for the Clippers at that time. Mm-hmm. And I guess he was a Bosch fan, and I was with my kids, and they went, "Oh my God, it's Doc Rivers!" Mm-hmm. And he turned and he saw me, and he went, "Hey, how you doing? How you doing?" Mm-hmm. And I kind of went, "Oh," I went over and we shook hands and talked for a second, and there was a pause, and I looked at him and I said, "You broke my heart." And he just looked at me and went, "How are you going to do me like that in front of your kids?" I told him he could get out of the penalty box with some Clippers tickets.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just you know, in the garden, the old garden, the new garden, I mean, it's just all you know, went at that period in my life, I was spending a lot of time in Boston, and my mother lived on Commonwealth and Mass Ave, so I could literally walk to Fenway Park from her house, and you could get nosebleed seats for nothing at all.
Yeah,
I was 14 years old, you know, I would just go and go to the games all the time. So it stuck, and here we are.
And here we are. It's funny you said you broke my heart, and anytime anybody says that, I think of Pacino, and that is a way that I'm turning to that moment.
Oh, I see. I stepped right into that, didn't I?
Fredo, you broke my heart.
That's right.
Doc, okay, so
Doc Rivers, you broke my heart. But he's so tall, I couldn't grab him by the ears and give him the Sicilian kiss of death. Plus, he would crush me like a grape.
See, now the amazing thing that you do about this, and again, I don't mean to make you perform, but I guess I'm doing so right now, and I understand what it means to ask somebody to do that as a guest. But I've seen you guest on Pollock's old chat show.
Yeah, he's a manipulative bastard. But okay.
And so I saw how you don't just do a Pacino; you do different eras of his career.
That's
your
true.
First getting started, and then you know the Serpico years as well, the Godfather years, and then to the current sort of maybe a little bit over the top Scent of a Woman type Pacino. So I've got three scenarios here.
Okay.
One for each version, if you don't mind.
Okay.
For you, Titus Welliver, to give me your young Pacino.
Okay.
Talking about your favorite New England delicacy. Okay. So you've grown up in the New England area. There's different types of
Panaconito Park. Yeah.
That's it right there.
That was very early. I have to say, you know, Rich, the thing for me is there used to be a restaurant on Boylston Street, and I was doing theater in Boston, and I would go there, and they had the freshest cherry stone clams you ever had, and a clam chowder. The clam chowder would knock your teeth out.
Ladies and gentlemen, fantastic. Titus Welliver. Oh.
I bet you Al Pacino has never eaten clam chowder.
I don't eat that New England. I eat the Manhattan clam chowder.
All right. Next up is the Serpico Godfather Dog Day Afternoon. I guess would you say that sort of era?
Yeah, yeah. That's the higher tones.
Okay. If you will, the longstanding argument for Patriots fans over the last 20 years is who's more responsible for the dynasty, Brady or Bill Belichick? Do you have any 2 cents, Serpico era, Godfather era, Dog Day Afternoon era, Al Pacino on who's more responsible for the success of the New England Patriots, the great quarterback or the great coach?
I got to tell you, Rich, you know, the thing for me, you know, here's the problem. You know, Tom Brady, he's a great ball player. He's a fantastic athlete, right? And you got to love him. And Bill Belichick, right? I mean, he's sort of like he's a sphinx, you know? He's got 2 expressions, right? That's silence and anger. And I admire that as an actor. But Tom Brady, I think, right, you know, he's the guy, he's out there, he's doing it. But he's also got a supermodel at home. I mean, who can't do well if you're married to Giselle, right? So I think it's sort of a, you know, it's a combination of the two. But, you know, I think if I could do an impression of Giselle, I would give her all the credit.
A very nuanced take by that version of Al Pacino. Very nuanced. Not one way or the other. Take it right down the middle. I appreciate that. Okay. And the last one for you, Titus Welliver, is the 90s era, I guess. Okay. Al Pacino, the Scent of a Woman Pacino, reacting to the news that Tom Brady has signed a $375 million contract to become a broadcaster. Once he's all finished, it was kind of a shocker to learn that Brady was going to do this. And then we found out how much money he's been given by Fox. I'd love to know what Scent of a Woman era Al Pacino thinks of that.
Well, I got to tell you, Rich, I mean, you know, talking about the thing, here's a guy, right,
who has dedicated his life to playing football. Now he's going to go. He's going to sit in a chair and wear an ugly sport coat. I think, you know, I don't know. Maybe he lost money at the market because maybe he needs the money. But for me, it's kind of preposterous, right? That I mean, athletes, it's a natural trajectory. When you leave, you're going to do commentary. But what's Tom Brady going to talk about? Mouthwash? A cologne? But he's got that supermodel wife, right? So that's always sort of... The caveat of that is he's married to her. He should keep him on a straight and narrow. But, you know, maybe she maxed out the plastic and he needs the money.
It's a pretty big contract, though, right? Scent of a woman now? It's a pretty...
Yeah, that's a big contract, baby. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of cologne, baby.
Tidy swabble, everyone. Well done.
That's right.
It's now impressive.
That give the monkey a banana.
There's the booze. It's throwing like mud around here.
That's right. If I had a flamethrower, Rich Eisen...
Oh my gosh. Oh man. Before I let you go, sir, and I appreciate it. So we mentioned Affleck before. You've been in the town, Argo, right? Gone Baby Gone.
And I did a little thing that was in Live by Night, but it was kind of part of a silent bit. Yeah.
When did you guys meet? How did you guys meet?
We met through me auditioning for Gone Baby Gone.
Is that right?
I was doing Deadwood at the time, so I had hair down to here and a beard, and I read the script, and it was an amazing script. But the character was really initially written for a guy about 15 years older than I was.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was put on tape at Warner Brothers, and then months passed. And I got a call from my manager, Michael Garnett, and he said, you're going to meet with Affleck next week. And I said, for what? And he said, Gone Baby Gone. I said, I thought that boat sailed. That's been months. And he said, no, he's back in town. So I prepare, and I go in to meet him, and we kind of jump right in. Ben has the sense to kind of, you know, having, you know, he's an actor himself. There's that anxiety, so it's almost better just to go right in and then do the small talk or what have you after the fact, because you're kind of a ball of nervous energy. So I do the scene, and then we start to talk, and Ben says, what happened to your accent? And I said, what are you talking about? He went, you're from Boston. I said, no, I'm not from Boston. You're not from Boston? I said, no. And he sort of was vexed by that, and he went, yeah. I think this is going to work out well. I expressed my concerns about the age because when I was in the waiting room, there were all these iconic character actors who I admired.
No kidding.
Who were 15 to 20 years older than I was, and I thought, I don't stand a chance in hell of getting this thing. Mm-hmm. But it ultimately worked out in my favor, and so I cut my hair off and kept a big giant mustache, which had its own zip code, and and it was, hands down, making movies with Ben Affleck has been, you know, in that process, has been some of the most pleasurable experiences I've ever had as an actor. He's an incredible director, and I think because he's an actor, he knows when to offer help and when to not, and I also just like him as a human being. He's effusively warm and very supportive and just a kind guy, and you know, inordinately gifted guy.
We've been told by, I guess Ham was here just last week, right? John Ham, that going around Boston with him is like, yeah. It's like the Red Sea parts, the Red Sox Sea parts when he walks around.
Yeah, it is. It's like, you know? It's walking through London with one of the Beatles. I mean, and the, and there's no escaping it. I mean, and he, the great thing about Ben is that he just sort of hides in plain sight. I mean, what's he going to do? Wear a baseball hat and sunglasses? I mean, he's a big guy, and he's got tremendous presence. But it's just it's also kind of wonderful because people are, you know, he is a native son, and people embrace him and they love him and they love his films, and you know, but they're screaming at him from moving cars.
Yeah, I bet, right? And
yeah.
Then he can get Fenway Park for the big denouement of a movie too.
Yeah, we spent almost 2 weeks shooting that big shootout scene at Fenway, and I was crushed because at that point the season had ended for the Sox. They didn't go any further.
Right.
But to be back there on Yawkey Way and shooting that scene, I have to say, and going inside.
I was about to say, did you go inside the Green Monster?
Oh,
did you
yeah,
go inside
yeah.
the monster itself?
Yeah.
and see all that stuff scrawled on the walls and whatever? Yeah. Did you put something up there yourself?
No. That to me is church. You know, I would never deface. You know, when you go into Fenway, it's you feel the energy. I have to say, I love Dodger Stadium. I love ballparks in general. Sure. And love to go to baseball games, but when I'm at Fenway, it's a whole different thing. And I went to see the Foo Fighters there a couple of years ago with my sons.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
It was incredible. It's just it has an energy and it has a history that's just kind of undeniable. And when you go there, I'm just at home. And they grow pretty good hot dogs there too.
Yeah.
And lobster rolls. Killer lobster rolls.
Yeah, we didn't hear that from young Pacino. It was just all about the clam chowder.
No. That was my neighbor from Brockton. I don't know.
Have you ever been to Wrigley? Have you ever had a chance?
Oh, yeah. No, Wrigley's great.
That's, you know, I mean,
Fenway. I went in the 80s when it wasn't, you know, when you could.
You can get tickets.
You could walk in. They would say, just come in.
That's right. Sit wherever you want. Yeah. I know. But Fenway, I mean, that'd be pretty cool for you to go in Fenway and shoot a movie there. And so. Yeah. Go by that would be great. I've never been in the monster, you know.
Oh, you gotta go. Through, you have to go. At Wrigley, it has that same kind of
course.
You know,
looks like pulsating. Scenery. Looks like scenery, right?
Yeah, it really does, and it's all there. And when you go, and also when you look out in those ballparks, and you're surrounded by the cityscape, it just puts you there. You see that Citgo sign, you know where you are.
Yeah, you do.
It's I always say that's kind of. I know I'm home in that way when I see the Citgo sign when I'm coming into Boston. It's just there, and you know, I hope it's always there because it's every bit as important as, you know, the Prudential Building in Boston and Bunker Hill.
Well, enjoy game two tonight between the Celtics and the Heat, and hope your Celtics go as long as far as you want. Congrats on Bosch's legacy, your entire career. I think Josh Charles is a guest on Monday's show. He told me that you guys are tight. I mean, we know a lot of the same people, and it's a pleasure to see you here in person as well.
We are tight. I adore him. Just be careful. He's a kleptomaniac, so anything that you don't want leaving the studio, you should nail it down. And
so it's a good thing he'll be on the phone then.
Yeah, he needs help, but I love it.
I understand that.
Yeah.
Good to see you, sir. Thanks for coming in here.
Thanks for having me. It was
anytime,
a great pleasure.
Man. Titus Welliver at Welliver_Titus on Twitter, at Titus Welliver Official on Instagram. And you can check out Bosch Legacy on Amazon Freevee. 4 new episodes left. 2 new eps drop tomorrow, and the final 2 episodes drop on Friday, May 27th. Available on Amazon Freevee. We are back to wrap up this Thursday show. Check on the PGA Championship leaderboard and more in a moment. Back here on the Rich Eisen Show. Oh, it's so great. That was so much fun.
Yeah. Amazing.
I don't know where the hat is. I put it over there. You can actually read what he wrote because there's not a curse word on it. It's just a response to one of the nastiest questions he was asked on the show. It's at the very top of the hat. I said, I assume it's a snake bite. Is that what he wrote?
I just assume a snake bite.
Okay, I just assume a snake bite is what he wrote.
Go ahead
and Google that, and you'll see which what he's responding to. And that is an unmentionable, to say
scene.
The least.
Yeah, Thomas Jane couldn't even get this.
Oh, Thomas Jane was like working a blue streak yesterday, huh? Just sitting there like he was laying on a couch.
He was so comfortable; it was amazing.
He
was just chilling, and like we were not on TV.
By the way, Peacock is the exclusive streaming home of Yellowstone,
by the way.
Head to the ranch and stream all 4 seasons of the record-breaking hit series. Go to peacocktv.com to sign up right now. Yellowstone, everybody. That was great right there with Titus Welliver. What do we have at on our leaderboard, Chris? Is it still Rory McIlroy? Is he off the course?
It's Rory McIlroy. He ended up bogeying to fall down to -4 and a tie with Will Zalatoris. Ah. And then on his final hole, the 9th hole, sank in like a 15-footer for birdie. So Rory is alone at -5.
And where's Tiger?
Tiger's +4. Really struggled coming in. He was grimacing and limping coming up 9. So curious to see what he said after the match, but he is +4.
Okay. He is +4. Well, Rory's getting it done. How about that?
Rory's getting it done. Yeah, Will Zalatoris and Tom Hoagie are -4. Matt Kuchar, Abraham Answer, 2 back at 3 under.
And Scottie Scheffler is about to tee off.
About to tee off. He actually might be on 1 right now.
Wow, there is some news. Max Scherzer out 6 to 8 weeks with a strained oblique for the New York Metropolitans.
Wow.
Yeah, he said he was having side discomfort and he came out the game. And I was like, well, that's a good thing. He came. Oh, my God.
Right now, the Yankees are in a duel with the Orioles. Yankees attempting to go.
Are you guys ever going to lose again?
20 games over 500 on May 19th.
Rich, you said Max Scherzer out 6 to 8 days, right?
That,
weeks. No.
Weeks. So it's possible that DeGrom returns before Scherzer does.
Well, yeah.
It's okay. Mets and Yankees, two of five teams currently on pace to win 100 games.
Well, I mean, we might have to get new odds now.
No,
I just can't. Baseball doesn't want me to be happy. I can't be happy.
It's all right. So
I'm happy. Al Horford's going to play tonight.
Here you go.
Marcus Smart, probable. Let's go.
Oh, and we went down the Nick Saban, Jimbo Fisher wormhole. Dion is yet to respond on camera.
Haven't seen anything from Coach Prime on Twitter or anything.
We did not discuss the Warriors. My Warriors showing up. Last night, as
not really,
the
not a whole lot to discuss.
We did not discuss my Warriors, showing up in Game One in scary fashion, and by scary I mean what the Warriors are in a way that no other team remaining in these playoffs can be. Is the shape-shifting organism that beats you in many different ways and can hit you with that massive run out of nowhere to put the game out of reach that Michael Malone, the Nuggets coach, was talking about in that first round. So what I mean that by that is Game 6, for instance, Klay Thompson, hardly any points, and then has points, right? Game 6, Klay has points, right? Or last night, actually, it was Klay with no points.
In the first half.
Right. So Game 6, Klay showed up and then had no points in the first half last night. But Andrew Wiggins was the one who was raising all boats.
Yep.
Wiggins hasn't really even shown up in these playoffs in the way that caused him to be an all-star this year. Yep. So Klay's down, Wiggins up. Curry went down, pull up until Curry comes back. They're just, it's what do you need?
Yeah.
And somehow, some way they got past Memphis. It helped that Ja wasn't there. But without their coach and without those long guys defending everywhere, it seemed to be much more of an open game for them last night. Honestly, they can hit you with a run unlike the Mavs, unlike the Heat, and unlike the Celtics. They've got a deeper championship-tested roster than anybody else. Now, Jimmy Butler and Tatum obviously can come hit you, but who's 2, 3, and 4 options for those guys if you need be? Because it's Curry, right, and it's Draymond, and it's Klay. And then it's definitely not – if it's not – Curry or Klay, it's going to be Poole, right? Mm-hmm. And if it's not one of them, maybe it's Draymond, right?
Or then it's Wiggins. Well, scoring wise,
last night, Wiggins.
Yeah.
The first half, for sure.
First former number one draft pick. The guy never really got a lot of credit.
That's
but,
correct.
You know, he was an 18, 19 point per game scorer.
And an all-star this year.
Yeah.
Starter. So if that team that showed up in game one continues to show up,
to quote Bernie Mac from Players Club, it's going to be trouble.
Yeah, I was going to go, Luka will order another.
Okay, well, that too. Yeah.
Mavs also really rely on the three-point shot, 11 for 48.
Yeah, they weren't hitting shots.
That's not good. Not good.
They weren't hitting shots.
Seven players in double figures for the Warriors.
But when the Warriors are cooking, it's like I said, they're a different organism. They shape-shift. What do you need? You need those threes? Okay, you need to have a game where you're hitting them with a fast break, or you've got that offense, that half court offense, the motion that'll hit you. You know, they just can't play those slobber knockers, right? Where you're just getting Memphis kind of beat him up in a way, right?
Yeah, but you know what?
I think they could. They still have Draymond too to battle that out.
By the Looney. Way, Looney. Let's talk about this Looney. Guy for a little bit, Looney. Man. Like
rebound geez. Machine,
yeah. Right? He's another guy that you don't rebound talk machine. About. Yeah. And if they make it to the finals, potentially the Mitten can come back in time for that.
Perhaps.
But Brockman, what did that? Remember what I told you in 2020 when the Warriors were going through all their injuries? I'm like, the rest of the NBA better eat right now because if this team comes back healthy, they're in trouble. And it looks like people are in
trouble. Said that, and we didn't even know how good Jordan Poole was going to be.
No, he hadn't even gotten drafted.
Yeah.
I just knew that, man, better get him now.
Then why didn't you choose him to win this year?
Well, we didn't know Kyrie was going to sit out.
Yeah.
Come on.
And I didn't know Jordan Poole was going to turn into Klay Thompson while Klay Thompson was out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, somebody has vision around here, at least.
Jesus.
If I had a flamethrower, Rich Eisen.
Hey!
Great show, guys.
New drop. Thank you, Sean Mitchell.
How great was Titus? That was so
great.
Awesome.
Titus Welliver. That's why we had him for two segments.
So awesome.
So much fun. We had Bosch here, guys.
We had Bosch.
Amazing.
We had Alabama.
You had Todd Parker yesterday,
Texas
right?
A&M drama, you know?
Say hello to my little friend.
Okay.
That's Jimbo Fisher.
Yeah.
That was Jimbo Fisher today.
And also, it's Andre the Giant's birthday, guys. Hey. Eighth wonder of the world. Yeah. Andre the Giant.
To play us out.
You know.
Have fun storming the castle. We'll finish up this show in a moment on Peacock.